This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Myers will look toward the net, let Arista go, that's blocked. He backhanded it toward the net, there's Kopp, a backhand shot, he scores! Andrew Kopp beat Grubauer between the legs, and then he punched the glass to the fans in behind the net. Winnipeg has a two-goal lead again. It's 5-3 for the Jets.
Our good friend Paul Edmonds with the call last night. It proves to be the game-winning goal. Andrew Kopp gets his third of the season early in the third period. The Avalanche had cut the Jets' lead from 4-1 to 4-3. His goal made it 5-3, and as I mentioned, was the game-winning goal in the Jets' eventual 7-4 victory over the Colorado Avalanche last night. Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL This Week. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg, Sean Asor away from the program on this Wednesday evening, producer James DeRoschuk doing a great job behind the board for us. We have 2 hours of Jets talk for you, 2 hours of hockey talk for you. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we're pleased to be joined by the general manager of the Detroit Red Wings, Ken Holland. The Red Wings is going to make their sole visit to Winnipeg coming up on Friday. Ken Holland's going to join us to talk about the Red Wings season thus far. But Ezzy, before we look ahead to tomorrow night in Minneapolis or in St. Paul against the Wild, and then Friday night between the Jets and the Red Wings, we look back at last night's Jets victory over the Colorado Avalanche, a 7-4 score that to some extent, I think, flatters the Winnipeg Jets, because I thought the Colorado Avalanche, you know, played well last night, with the exception of Philip Grubauer in their goal in their net, who was absolutely horrendous. And if you had to place the blame on one player, I would suggest it goes squarely at the feet of Philip Grubauer.
Yeah, when you allow 6 goals on 20 shots,
yeah,
that's not good for any goaltender. And Grubauer was not good, and he's not having a good year. And, you know, if you're the Colorado Avalanche and Joe Sakic, you wonder, I mean, this Avalanche team, we expect to go to the playoffs this year, Drew, but, you know, Semyon Varlamov's out of the lineup right now, and the way Grubauer's playing, they don't have a number one goalie right now, and you know, that was the difference in the game. And you know, you're watching the game last night, and I agree, the first period was not a great period for the Jets, and you're looking at the shots, 29-14 for the Avalanche after two periods, and the Jets are up 4-3, and with the exception of late in that second period, you know, if you remember Carl Soderberg's first goal, and then Ryan Graves scored, and they made it a one-goal game there, but you know, Andrew Kopp gets that greasy goal early on in the third period, and you know, we played the clip from Paulie Edmonds. He was pumped up, and you know, the goal that really stands out to me, though, is the Blake Wheeler goal, the goal that made it 3-1 early in the second period. Patrick Laine,
the shorthanded goal. Yeah.
It was a beautiful goal, and we've seen Wheeler and Scheifele connect so many times over the years. And you know, Scheifele's goal later in the game was pretty nice. That, I think, at the time made it 5-3 or 6-3 or 6-4.
That was the 6-3 goal.
There you go, 6-3. That was the goal where he batted it in.
Crosby-esque with the little bunt of the puck as it's floating up in the air after Grubauer makes the initial save on the breakaway.
Former Expo Otis Nixon would have liked that, if you remember that name. Nice bunter for the Montreal Expos back in the day.
He tried to bunt to get on base, if you remember, the Jays. That was the final out for the Jays' first World Series back in, what was that, 92?
Yep.
He tried to do a drag bunt up the first baseline because he had a ton of speed, Otis Nixon did.
Yeah, the old slap bunt, Drew, but I like the way that the Jets kind of persevered through some sloppy play. And you know, I was up in the seats last night with my sister in Section 321, and I got to give the guys behind us in Section 321, if you've ever sat in the 300s, it's obviously louder than the lower level, but the guys behind us were pumped up and fired up, and they were giving the Avalanche a hard time the entire game. And, you know, they were really, I think, the fourth star, if you want to call it that. But, you know, it just wasn't a very crisp game from the Jets.
Yeah.
And you saw some nice goals. And, you know, you forget, Nikolai Ehlers and Dustin Byfuglien are not in this game, and they still score 7 goals, right?
Yeah. I mean, from seven different goal scorers at that.
Right. And, you know, Mark Scheifele, Blake Wheeler, we talked about it. They led the way offensively. I thought Jacob Trouba had a really good game, even though
And two assists for Trouba last night.
Right. Even though he got burned there on the Carl Soderberg goal. But, you know, when you talk about, you know, this Jets team, these games coming up are big, but especially these three games, and I'm talking about the game against Dallas, which they won 5-1, and this game against Colorado, and the game tomorrow against the Minnesota Wild. These in-division games are huge right now because prior to that, as you know, Drew, they lost three of their previous four games, and that game against Pittsburgh was maybe their worst game of the year. So I really like how they've responded to that game.
Well, you know, it goes to show that, you know, truly taking care of business in division matters so much in this day and age in the NHL. I mean, they play against that game in Pittsburgh that you referenced back on the Friday night, so the last Friday night, and they don't look great. And then they come home and you win two games in division, and you create even more separation between yourself and the Avalanche and the Stars, you know, two teams that are trying to chase you down atop the Central Division. I mean, you can sort of lump the Jets and the Predators in one pool in the Central Division, and then there's the Avalanche, the Stars, and the Wild in that other pool. And every time the Avalanche get an opportunity against the Jets so far this year, the Jets have handled them at home two straight times. Every time the Stars get an opportunity, they had a big opportunity on Sunday. That 5-1 victory for the Jets was, I mean, the Stars with a victory there, would they move? They move 2 points behind the Winnipeg Jets at that point in time. What happens? The Stars get the first goal. Adam Lowry comes out of the penalty box. He's got a bit of the red ass. He's upset. He gets the Jets back to equalized, and then boom, 5-1 Jets. Tyler Myers with the wraparound to give the Jets the lead, and the Jets just take off from there. And they create more separation, and what they do is they demoralize the Dallas Stars, and they demoralize the Colorado Avalanche in saying, you know, You've thrown a good punch at us, but we are in an upper echelon above you, and you're not punching up to our weight just yet. And that's the weight the Jets are in, and that's the weight class that the Jets and the Predators are in together.
Right, and even though Gabriel Landeskog had maybe one of his best games of the year.
He's been great all year, though.
Well, yeah, exactly.
That whole line is just incredible.
Right, it really is. It's arguably the best line in hockey.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you could say that, you know, the Shifley-Wheeler-Connor line, or if it's Ehlers on that top line, you can say that's one of the best lines in hockey, but I would listen to an argument for sure that Rantanen, Landeskog, and MacKinnon is the best line in hockey. But
no question.
Even with that top line, I mean, I thought the Avs looked fairly unorganized in their own zone, and I really like Tyson Barrie's game, and I think Samuel Girard is one of the better young defensemen in the game. But I think when you look at, you know, Ryan Graves and you look at Patrick Nemeth on that third pair, I thought that they struggled in their own end, but it really goes back to the goaltending. Mm-hmm. Philip Grubauer just, he didn't look confident. And you got the impression early on in that game it was going to be one of those nights. Anybody watching that game that saw the early goals go in from the Winnipeg Jets, I mean, Matty Perreault's goal was a beautiful goal. So we're not taking anything away from the Jets here. I mean, there were some nice goals. We talked about Shifley's goal. We talked about Wheeler's goal. I mean, Trouba's empty net goal doesn't count, obviously. But there were, I'd say, three really nice goals in that game yesterday. But you got to make some saves for your team.
Well, it's the cop one that you have to save more than anything. Your team is, you know, you're down 4-1. So what happens? Your team gets two quick goals, and they battle back, and they're feeling pretty good about themselves as they head into the second intermission, only being down 4-3. Look at us. Look how we're fighting back. Look how we're trying to stay in this game. And the Avalanche, remember, they started the third period on the power play. I think it was Brian Little was still in the penalty box after he took a penalty late in the second period, and the Jets are able to kill it off. But for the most part, early, I mean, it was only in the first couple minutes, the first 2.5-3 minutes of that third period, the Avalanche controlled the play, and they were close. They had an opportunity. They had a power play where, boom, you tie the game if you're the Colorado Avalanche. Instead, what happens, there's nothing to this play. This does not look like it's going to be a scoring opportunity. And Andrew Kopp comes down, and it's just, like you said, it's a greasy goal, and it's the kind of goal that Andrew Kopp is going to score. But to bank it in off the goalie's pad is just so demoralizing for the Colorado Avalanche, for the players who have fought back to make it a 4-3 game, that, man, our goalie can't even give us one damn save. He can't make one save to let us get, you know, more opportunities to make it a 4-all game. Instead, he gives up a cheapie. He gives up an easy one, and it's 5-3, and they never got close again. I mean, the closest they got at that point was 6-4, but by then the game was all but over at that point.
Right, and Drew, I thought that Brian Little's goal that made it 4-1 Jets a couple of minutes after that Wheeler goal in the second period, I thought that was a little bit weak. That was the power play goal,
yeah.
And I thought that Grubauer was a little bit slow to get over and react to Little's shot. So overall, you kind of wonder, goes back to what I said before, you know, you've got 6 weeks or so before the trade deadline. I mean, if you're Joe Sakic, Are you thinking about bringing in a goaltender? I don't know, because this Avalanche team, I think, is going to be a playoff team. I mean, they're going to fight with the Wild and the Stars for those wild card spots, right? They're not going to win the division. I mean, Nashville and Winnipeg are quietly running away with this division, and Nashville's healthy now. But, you know, Pavel Francouz, we talked about it on Saturday.
Yeah, he's got two games under his belt. I mean,
and Semyon Varlamov is going to come back eventually, but you wonder. I mean, Varlamov wasn't exactly, you know, lighting it up when he was in net.
His numbers were better than Grubauer's. The problem if you're the Avalanche.
Well, Grubauer's numbers are really bad.
8.95 and a 3.29 save percentage. Pardon me, goals against average for Grubauer. Yeah, his numbers are bad. The problem is you just signed him to the 3-year contract. You traded for him from the Washington Capitals. Because you remember, I mean, last year he got the start at the beginning of the playoffs for the Capitals. Braden Holtby wasn't very good last year for the Capitals during the regular season. Grubauer saved their bacon for a lot of the regular season. He gets the first start in the playoffs. Quickly, it becomes Braden Holtby's net again. Instead, you know, in the offseason, the Avalanche trade for him. This is the second straight time they've gone to the well from the Washington Capitals for a goalie. Most people don't remember Varlamov was a member of the Capitals. That's where the Avalanche acquired him from. And you signed him to a 3-year contract extension. Varlamov's a free agent at season's end. Well, clearly right now, if you're the Avalanche, if you're Joe Sakic, you can't feel confident in Philip Grubauer being your long-term answer this season and then going forward. In net, his performance just hasn't given you any confidence to that effect.
Right, and it's not all on Grubauer and the goaltending. I mean, watching this Avalanche team, you forget that a couple of years ago, the Avalanche were the worst team in the league. Mm-hmm. They had 48 points. I mean, last year, they turned their fortunes around and made the playoffs. Obviously, they didn't go very far, but you look at this Avalanche team, and it's still very flawed. It's got one of the top lines in the league, and, you know, you've got some other talent there. I mean, Carl Soderberg, I think, is on a good team, a third-line player.
Yeah.
And, you know, Tyson Jost, good young player, JT Compher, but, I mean, the drop-off is significant after those guys, right? Mm-hmm. And again, they have some good defensemen. They have some guys that can move the puck. And, you know, when you're talking about Tyson Barrie, he's a very good offensive defenseman. But compared to the Jets or the Predators, their defense does not match up.
Their defense is a step behind. Their forward group is a step behind.
And Drew, that's with Zadorov in the lineup.
Yeah. I mean, they are just, they're not to that upper echelon of the Central Division, and they probably, you know, it's going to be an interesting offseason, certainly in Colorado, and they're feeling still good about themselves, because you mentioned it's only been 2 years, 2 years removed from being the worst team in the NHL, so the fact that they're, you know, a playoff contender this year and were a playoff team last year, they're feeling good about themselves. And anytime you have Rantanen, McKinnon, and Landeskog, you feel good about yourself. But they still have a lot of warts on the back end, and the Jets were able to expose it last night in a game that, you know, they talked about it today. Paul Maurice mentioned it. You know, the Jets win 7-4, and then they win 5-1 on Dallas, and Paul Maurice was asked, you know, which game do you like? Well, he said the Dallas game is the game that he likes head and shoulders above last night's game.
Oh, absolutely.
There was structure to the game
for
the Jets on Sunday. There wasn't much structure to their game last night.
Well, the fact that the Jets got outshot 2-1,
won
the game 7-4, and didn't have Ehlers and Byfuglien tells you how good this team can be.
Can be, and conversely, because yes, you're right, conversely, how bad the goaltending was for the Avalanche last night. But, I mean, it's the Jets are dynamic. Anytime you can get 7 goals in a game and have it from 7 different goal scorers, I mean, I haven't looked, but I'd be curious to see when the last time that happened in the NHL, because you think that one of those goals is going to come from a duplicate goal scorer.
When Laine had no points.
Yeah. I mean,
7 goals, no points.
It was a bizarre night last night at Bell MTS Place. It's not a game that the Jets really want to see, and they're certainly not going to see it when they go to St. Paul tomorrow to play a Minnesota Wild team that is really, you know, they've played well against the Jets this year, and they definitely have structure to their game, which the Avalanche and the Jets to some degree did not have last night. When we come back, we'll talk about the Jets contest in St. Paul tomorrow night. We'll also touch on the second half of the back-to-back back at home on Friday against the Detroit Red Wings. You're listening to NHL This Week. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Larkin back up the ice for the Red Wings. Hits the line. Larkin, backhander in front. Big save. Lauren Brossoit makes the game's first stop 36 seconds in, and a big one off Bertuzzi.
That was back in October, the first time the Jets and the Red Wings met. If you recall, it was a 2-1 Winnipeg Jets victory in Detroit. It was, again, the second. It was the first game on a back-to-back. The Jets then went on the Saturday night into Toronto before heading overseas into Finland. So the Jets and the Red Wings, having met once a number of months ago, will do battle again Friday night at Bell MTS Place. But before that, the Jets will be in St. Paul tomorrow night to face their division rival, Minnesota Wild. Welcome back to NHL This Week. Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. This segment of the show brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the entire family. To make an appointment today, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. So, Jets look to make it three in a row in division here, Ezzy, tomorrow night, and they play in St. Paul. Do you put any stock into the idea that the Wild might have the Jets' number so far this year? Or do you just think it's been two games, and really the second of those two games, the Jets had a commanding lead into the third period before they fell apart?
Yeah, I don't put too much stock into it because the Jets could have won either of those games. I would say especially that first game that was in Minnesota. The last game a couple of weekends ago.
Yes, pardon me. Yeah.
That was just, it wasn't a good performance. Right. I was actually at that game with Naomi and Ariella, and that was her first NHL game, of course.
She was cursing up like cursing a storm. It was really upsetting to hear a six-month-old baby talk like that.
All I know is that she had the best time ever. So that's, as a parent, that's all we cared about. But, I mean, you remember that was an afternoon game, and it just wasn't the Jets' best performance. And that kind of started that little slide. We talked about it, three losses in four games, and now they've righted the ship, and they've won two in a row here. But this Wild team, for me, when we did our predictions at the beginning of the year, Drew, I didn't have them as a playoff team. And obviously, like many people, I wrongly predicted that the Blues would be in the playoff picture. And, you know, the Wild are right there with one of those wild card spots. Yeah. The Colorado Avalanche have that other wild card spot. They've fallen out. And as you mentioned, the Stars are now in third place in the Central. But, you know, this Wild team, it's similar to previous years in that they have trouble scoring goals.
Mm-hmm.
They're, I think, much slower than teams like the Jets and the Predators and the elite teams like the Lightning and the Capitals.
Mm-hmm.
Devan Dubnyk, even though he had a rough first round last year against the Jets, I mean, he's giving them excellent goaltending like he has done for so many years. But I really don't put that much stock into it. I mean, if you look at the matchup between the Jets and the Wild over the years, how many times have we seen these games be one goal games, right?
More often than not.
Right. I mean, we've seen them decided in the third period or in overtime. So I expect this game to be another close game. I mean, I don't see the Wild blowing the Jets out, and I certainly don't think that the Jets are going to blow the Wild out because, as we talked about, I mean, this Wild team, that's been their foundation for so many years.
Yeah.
They're a good defensive team, but my question always remains with this Minnesota Wild team is, if they get to the playoffs, who are they beating? Because if the Wild match up against the Jets, sorry, see you later. Well, I could see that series being four or five games.
Just like it was last year.
Right. Yeah. If the Wild play the Nashville Predators, sorry, see you later, four or five games. I mean,
especially they have such a small margin of error because they don't have as much talent as the Jets and the Predators and the other upper echelon Western Conference teams that when you lose a guy like Matt Dumba, like the Wild have for, I mean, he's out for the next 3 months. I mean, that's realistically what, if they make the playoffs and if he was to come back in time for the playoffs, he's not going to be anywhere near 100%, just like they lost Ryan Suter last year. I mean, you have no margin of error. And that's the problem with the Minnesota Wild are right in that probably that terrible spot to be where they're not bad enough right now to bottom out and sort of start a full rebuild, and they're not good enough to be a true contender in the Western Conference. So what are they? Well, they're a fringe playoff team that is right now in the playoffs largely because the rest of the Western Conference is pretty lousy. I mean, Vancouver is playing above their heads, but, I mean, you know, nobody had any expectations for them. Anaheim has lost, well, they lost now 9 games in a row, not in regulation, but they've lost 9 games in a row after last night's defeat or a couple nights ago's defeat to the Oilers.
Yeah, I think the Ducks are 0-6-3 in their last 9.
Yeah, so they've lost 9, you know, they haven't won in regulation in 9 games. The Oilers are struggling. I mean, the Coyotes aren't going to, they just lost Nick Schmaltz for the rest of the season, so they're done. I mean, the Blackhawks, we know that, you know, they've struggled all year, even though they've been playing decent hockey in the last 10 games, and the Blues and the Kings, and you can go on. You know which teams are really competitive, and the Wild might sneak into the playoffs again, but There's nothing to believe that they're going to go any further than that.
Yeah, what sticks out to me about this Wild team, I mean, and you have to give them credit, they've defeated the Jets twice this year, and the sure. Jets are the top team in the Western Conference, but what stands out to me is...
Central.
Pardon me, the Central. I guess they're not first in the Flames.
The three teams in the Pacific are all ahead of the Jets and the Preds and the Central now.
Right, and then you factor in the games in hand, right?
Right,
so
of course.
I still have the Jets number one. Just let me have the Jets as number one for now, Drew.
Go right ahead.
But when you talk about this Wild team, I mean, I think they've kind of dragged the Jets a little bit into a bit of a grinder-style game, right? Mm-hmm. You talk about Mikko Koivu, right? I thought Mikko Koivu did an excellent job. His line did an excellent job matched up against the Scheifele-Wheeler line. But when you're talking about guys like Marcus Foligno, and you're talking about Matt Hendricks and even a guy like Nino Niederreiter. I mean, the Wild have scrappy players. Mm-hmm. Nate Sealer is another guy that's a scrappy. Nick Sealer.
Nate Prosser
is
combine them
who
into
I was
one player.
Sealer and Prosser are the third pairing there. But when you're talking about this Wild team, I mean, they're a physical team. We saw back in St. Paul in late November, the Jets and the Wild got into that skirmish at the Wild bench.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the Wild have kind of, you know, played to their strengths in that regard. The Wild know that they can't play fire wagon back and forth trade chances hockey with the Jets, right? Because the Jets have more higher end skill, even without Nikolaj Ehlers and Dustin Byfuglien. So that's something to look out for, and the Jets know that. And they have guys like Adam Lowry and Ben Chiarot and Brandon Tanev. They have guys that can mix it up, but they don't want it to I think, be a distraction. And I think especially in that first meeting in St. Paul, I think it was a bit of a distraction, and the Jets got off their game a little bit.
Yeah, and then it'll be on Friday night, shifting away from the Jets Wild tomorrow night. So the rare instance where the visiting team is going to be sitting in Winnipeg waiting for the Jets to arrive back from St. Paul, the Red Wings presumably will, be in town tomorrow, you know, watching the Jets and the Wild potentially. But whatever it is, the Red Wings will be waiting for them. This is a Detroit team that has continued to struggle all season long. They're towards the bottom of the NHL's Eastern Conference. 16-22-7 on the season for 39 points, which leaves them tied with the New Jersey Devils, although albeit the Devils have three games in hand on the Red Wings. The Red Wings, they've lost their last two. They're 2-6-2 in their last 10 games. It's a team that's clearly going to be a seller come the trade deadline, and we'll talk to Ken Hall and Red Wings general manager at the bottom of the hour about the Red Wings and the trade deadline upcoming in about six or so weeks. This is a game, even though it's the second half of back-to-back, the Jets should be able to handle the Red Wings relatively easy. There's a significant talent disparity between the Jets and the Red Wings during that game on Friday night.
Sure, Drew, but I think you'd agree that the Red Wings have been one of those surprising teams because they're not going to make the playoffs. I mean, they're way back of the playoff line in the Eastern Conference, but they're not an easy win. And yesterday you saw the Montreal Canadiens. I mean, they only beat them 3-2.
Mm-hmm.
And they haven't been, blown out the entire season. Yes, I mean, they've had their fair share of bad games, but Dylan Larkin's having a phenomenal year. Jimmy Howard's going to represent the Wings in the All-Star game.
Yeah, he's one playing, of the pending unrestricted free agents.
Right, and Howard is a guy that, he's kind of playing like he was playing 3 or 4 years ago mm-hmm. when the Red Wings were making the playoffs. So I agree with you. I mean, this is a game that the Jets have to win, and I expect them to win the game because they're simply more talented, even with the injuries they have. But, I mean, the Red Wings are not, I would say, the easiest win right now because I think they're playing really tough for Jeff Blashill, and I think that they know right now that all they have to play for is jobs for next year.
It's true. I mean, the Red Wings are sort of an interesting story in that they can score. They're middle of the pack in the NHL in goals for. It's the goals against that's been the problem this year. And you look at Jimmy Howard, and he's playing well this year. But you look at the back end of the Red Wings, and you have three guys who you thought would be regulars on their back end in Danny DeKeyser, Mike Green, and Trevor Daley, who are all out of their lineup. And so you take those three veteran presence on the Red Wings back end, and you're now trying to replace it with guys who are young or guys who really can't fill the role they're being asked to play. And that really is what accounts for the Red Wings being towards the bottom of the NHL in goals against. It's that they just can't keep the puck out of their own zone. They can't keep the puck out of their own net because they're woefully understaffed on the back end.
Yeah, and we should mention Anthony Mantha's back in the lineup. He's been back in the lineup for, I think, a couple of weeks. He missed about 10 to 12 games earlier in the season with an injury. But you're right. I mean, Green's out, DeKeyser's out, mm-hmm. Daly's out. I think DeKeyser's been out of the lineup since November, if I'm not mistaken. But
yeah, well, he played 20 games so far this season, and he's been out of the lineup. I mean, the last game DeKeyser played was actually December 4th.
There you go.
Was the last game that he played. But he's been in and out of the lineup, and you know, he missed 3 weeks in October, and then to your point about he's now been out of the lineup for a month. When you have a team like the Red Wings that is thin, when you lose guys, it's hugely problematic. Same thing with the Wild losing Dumba. You lose three guys on your back end, you don't have the internal resources to replace them.
And you know what, Drew? Even if this Red Wings team is a mixture of older players and rookies, and a guy like Nicholas Cronwall, this might be his last year in the NHL. I mean, Cronwall is still laying the body.
Yeah, well.
He's lost
some of his foot speed, but if he gets you in the trolley tracks, he's going to make you pay for it.
He's still a fun player to watch. He's still kind of one of those old school type of defensemen, like a Scott Stevens or a Colin White for those Devils fans. And you know, this team is I think trending in the right direction. I mean, there's going to be some rough years. They're going to get another high first round draft pick.
Mm-hmm.
But when you talk about, you know, guys like Dennis Cholowski in the lineup and Michael Rasmussen, Evgeny Svechnikov.
Yeah.
He hasn't played at all this year. He's a former first round pick. He's a very skilled player. So the future is bright.
Philip Zadina, who of course was playing at the World Juniors and is actually having a good nice year in Grand Rapids.
There you go, Zadina, sixth overall.
Yeah, Joe Valeno, who was a first round pick towards the end of last year's first round. He's having a great year, I think, in Drummondville of the QMJHL. So
three or 4 years from now, this team is not going to be one of the bottom feeders like they are now. I mean, the future is very bright for this team.
Yeah, it is. It'll be interesting to see if the Jets can take advantage of the Red Wings, even on the second half of a back-to-back situation. Let's head to break, and when we come back, we're going to be joined by Detroit Red Wings general manager Ken Holland, talk more about the Jets' opponent on Friday night as the Red Wings make their sole visit to Winnipeg. You're listening to NHL This Week. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, Wednesday evening. Welcome back to NHL This Week. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program the general manager of the Detroit Red Wings, Ken Holland. Ken, good evening, and thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, nice to be with you.
Likewise, Ken, always appreciate you giving us your time. Red Wings going to make their sole visit to Winnipeg come Friday night, and Ken, obviously not where you want the Red Wings to be standings-wise, to this point of the season, towards the bottom of the pack in the Eastern Conference, but how would you evaluate the Red Wings' season thus far?
First off, you said it right. I mean, obviously, we're close to the bottom of the league. Really probably happened here the last 15 games. We got off to a tough start the first seven games, lost all seven, 0-5-2, a couple in extra time, and without basically our top four defense, no Erickson, no Green, no DeKeyser, and no Daly. And then they all came back, and I think we went something like 13 wins, 7 losses, and 2 ties, and climbed our way back into, being relevant and sort of in the picture. And then within a 10-day period, we lost Helm for 2 months. We lost Green for 6 weeks. We lost DeKeyser for 6 weeks. We lost Mantha for 6 weeks. And then had some other little minor injury. I think Athanasiu missed a couple games here and there. But I think we've won 2 or 3 in our last 12, and obviously have plummeted in the standings, and in the neighborhood of 10 or 12 points out of a playoff spot. So put ourselves in a real, real tough spot. I think we've had some positive things happen to our franchise that are going to be really impact our franchise in a positive way down the road. But for the 18-19 season, as we sit here today, unless we do something incredibly dramatic over the last 35 games, it looks like it's going to be a tough goal.
Ken, this time of year, early January, a lot of NHL teams are having their scouting meetings, and the Red Wings are also having their scouting meetings this week. Can you just walk us through the process, the management, and the scouts? What goes on in those meetings? Obviously, we're not going to ask you anything that's going to do with any player movement or anything like that, but what are those scouting meetings like for your team and a typical NHL team?
What we do is, actually, all our people are coming in today. We start tomorrow morning. All our amateur scouts, all our pro scouts. 4 or 5 years ago, we used to have two separate meetings, amateurs, and then a week or 10 days later, pros. We've put them together and think it's important that all our people are together. And tomorrow, for most of the day, it'll be presentations by myself on our team, Ryan Martin, my assistant general manager, on what's going on in Grand Rapids, Sean Horkov, our director of player development, what's going on with the players in our system that we own that are not in Detroit, not in Grand Rapids, our prospects. And then we have some conversation points and some based upon the presentations that we're all making, it's going to lead into conversations, on our team. And then, over the course of the next 5 days, we're going to have amateur meetings, obviously, to talk about, our amateur lists and go through our lists and come out with kind of a list at the end of this week as we head into the second half of the amateur scouting season. And from the pro side, go through all the other 30 teams in the NHL and all their players and go through our team and what we're trying to accomplish as we lead up to the trade deadline and what we're trying to accomplish as we head into the summertime, leading up to July 1st, unrestricted free agency and the draft, with trades and what things that we'd like to do with our team to make our team better in the short term and in the long term.
Yeah, and for those who aren't aware, your head of amateur scouting is former Winnipeg Jet defenseman Jeff Finley.
Yeah, he and Tyler Wright head up our amateurs, and Mark Howe heads up our pros. People that have been in the game for their entire life, and in Tyler Wright's, Jeff Finley's, and Mark Howe's case, obviously three guys that have played a lot of games in the National Hockey League in their careers.
Ken Holland is our guest on NHL this week. Ken, of course, is the general manager of the Detroit Red Wings. And Ken, in your first answer about the season thus far, you mentioned some of the positives that you've seen so far this year. What are those positives, that you can take out of the season thus far?
Well, Dylan Larkin really has become, he's 22 years of age. He's really developed into he's got 40 points, just around a point a game for us on a team that, had a 13-14 game point scoring streak. He's taken his game to another level. He had 63 points last year, which was 16 goals, and he's already surpassed that. And he's got, last year Zetterberg is on the team, so most nights Zetterberg had the tough matchup, so he's getting his points with tougher matchups. He's, when we go into on the road, the other team, he's our number one guy. The other team, he's going to face the other team's best defenseman and their best line that can check. So he's getting his points matched up against the other team's best. Athanasio scored 2 goals last night. He's got 18 goals. He's a young kid that just starting to come into his own. Anthony Mantha was playing real well, and then he again broke his hand in early December and was out for 6 weeks and just came back. Philip Peronic is a young defenseman that was selected to the American Hockey League All Rookie Team with the Winnipeg Jet defenseman last year, and he came up early in the year, and I thought he was trying to be a little bit too aggressive and kind of got caught in some tough situations that led to scoring chances. He went back down to the American League in the second stint. With all the injuries that we've had here, we've called him back up, and he's playing 18, 19, 20 minutes a night and playing real well. So, we've got good things going on, but at the same time, in our organization, we're also trying to monitor the Zadinas, Joe Valeno, like Jared McIsaac, who played for Canada's World Junior team. Our second-round pick from 3 years ago, Gustav Lindstrom, plays regular. He's a 21-year-old in Finland in the Swedish Elite League. That's the direction that we're going. We believe we've got some good young players that are going to find their way onto the Red Wings here in 1920 and 2021. Jimmy Howard's had a tremendous year for us. He obviously was selected as our representative at the to go to the All-Star game. So, you know, we get good goaltending from him and Bernier on a night-to-night basis. We just, again, I think when all hands are on deck, I think that we're a competitive hockey team. The record shows that. We're just not quite deep enough, and we're counting on a lot of young players that are just learning to deal with the responsibility that goes with getting more minutes and being on the power play, and we're going through the growing pains.
You mentioned Dylan Larkin in your answer there, Ken, and of course he's on pace for career highs in goals and assists this season. Having been around the game for a while, is there anybody that Dylan Larkin reminds you of, any former player that Larkin reminds you of?
I hate doing comparisons. I guess I would say to you, what I respect the most about Dylan Larkin is his passion, is his determination to become the face of this franchise. He wants to be on the ice. He wants to play against the best players. He wants the responsibility. He's prepared when the game is over, win or lose, to be available to talk to the media. When our team lost out in the playoffs last year, he represented the USA at the World Championships. He went to a camp in Toronto on the ice with John Tavares, some players, school. He went to Tampa Bay to a skills school. He has a hockey school. He's on the ice physically himself. It's not just his name. He goes on the ice for 2 weeks in Detroit to his own hockey school. He loves being on the ice. He loves the game of hockey, and he's doing everything he can on an everyday basis to make himself better and better and better. And ultimately, in my experiences in the game for 30 to 40 years, the players that have a real passion, that just love the game and it's everything to them, find a way to make themselves the best that they can be. And certainly he's becoming, like I said, certainly the face of the franchise and I think it's due to his passion, his will, his determination to get better.
Ken, have you had any pending discussions? Pardon me. Have you started any discussions with any of your pending free agents, particularly goaltender Jimmy Howard? We talked about him earlier. He's been announced that he'll be going.
We're just sort of getting there.
Okay.
I've started to reach out or representatives for these players reached out. Obviously, we're pushing here now. You know, January 9th or 10th, the trade deadline's the 25th of February, so we're a little over a month away. So certainly I do plan here in the next week or so to talk to, you know, Jimmy Howard's an unrestricted free agent. Gustav Nyquist is an unrestricted free agent. Vanek, Nick Jensen, Witkowski, you know, so I'll probably in some of those cases have conversations and see what they're thinking. Nick Cronwell's another guy, obviously a player that's played over 900 games for the Red Wings. He's 37 years of age with a lot of will, a lot of determination, a lot of character. Want to see what Nick's thinking as we push forward here towards the trade deadline and towards the summer. So those are conversations that I do plan to have. I have to have to gather the information that I need to make whatever decisions that we make heading into February the 25th. So it's on the horizon. Those things that you're talking about are going to happen here in the next week or two.
You know, Ken, you've been around as general manager for the Red Wings for a while now, and about, you know, unrestricted free agents. As a general manager, how difficult is it sort of to balance the want to not lose an asset for nothing when they become an unrestricted free agent and, you know, maybe get a draft pick or a player back in exchange for that player's rights, you know, versus staying competitive that season and then staying competitive and maybe keeping them on your roster next year? How delicate of a balance is that?
You know what? That is a great question, and that's something that we are, you know, I think the last 2 years You know, I traded Tatar at the deadline last year for a first-round pick, a second, and a third. The first was Joe Valeno. We've got another second this year, the Islanders' second, and we got a third in 2020. And then the year before that, we traded Vanek for a third. We traded Brendan Smith for a second and a third. We traded Yurko for a third. It was important for our franchise to have a period of time when we had an excess of draft picks. And I think that we've used some of those draft picks to turn the young players into players that we think have a chance to impact our team down the road. But if we keep going the way we're going here, this year we're going to miss the playoffs. This will be the third consecutive year out of the playoffs. And exactly what you're saying is, do you continue down that path of trading away players that you think can help your team in 19-20? And just continue to try to get future assets and set your sights on 4 or 5 years from now, or do we re-sign some of those players that we think can help us in 19-20, and then try to add to them because we're going to have a ton of cap space this summer and the summer of 19 and the summer of 20, and we've got as we sit here today probably $25 million of cap space. In the summer of 19 and maybe another 12, 13, 14 in the summer of 20. So we've got a lot of expiring contracts. Do we spend some of that money to keep some of those players here and then use rest of the money, go into the marketplace in the summertime to try to add some players to our team? That's the decision that I eventually have to make based upon the input from all my people here over the course of the next week and in my conversations with managers around the league leading up to the trade deadline. That's a great, great question. I don't have an answer for you, but obviously I'm going to have those answers internally before February the 25th.
Ken, we just have one more question for you, and we really appreciate you coming on tonight. You're, of course, originally from Vernon, B.C. Being from the West Coast, why do you think that Seattle was ideal to become the NHL's 32nd franchise?
They've had a hockey history there for forever. You know, obviously Seattle was in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s in that professional league out west. And then obviously junior hockey went into Seattle. So obviously a great city that has got a lot of companies that have headquarters there being from British Columbia, from Vernon, I still have a place out in Vernon. I go back there for about a month in the summertime. Certainly Seattle is a great city. And Gary Bettman, as the commissioner, really has done an incredible job of allowing Las Vegas to sort of test their market. And when they were to test their market and he had all that interest in Vegas, a year later they got an expansion team and he did the same thing with Seattle. And when you kind of go into the test market, you got 20,000-25,000 people submitting bids or submitting interest for season tickets. You know right off the bat that you've got a market that is excited about our league and our sport. So great job by Gary Bettman and great job by those people that are in Seattle now. And it's an exciting time for our league, adding Las Vegas, and in a couple of years adding Seattle. Great cities and fabulous exposure for our league out west.
Ken Holland is the general manager of the Detroit Red Wings. The Red Wings visiting Winnipeg on Friday night to do battle with the Jets. Ken, appreciate your time this evening. Thanks so much for joining us, providing some great insight into your role with the Red Wings and your organization as well.
Thanks, guys.
Take care, Ken. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about that interview. We'll look at which NHL players are providing their best value dollar for point total so far this season. Much more to come. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN 1290.ca.
And he'll get it up the boards now to Gord. He cuts in with McDonough. McDonough gets the return feed, goes forehand, the pass behind Gord. Adam Ernie steps in, scores! The Lightning get one back.
I think it's Yanni Gord, Rick. Yeah, he's coming to the bench first. It's a heck of
shot here.
Yanni Gourde of the Tampa Bay Lightning, 28 points so far this season. He's making $1 million this year. The fourth lowest cost per point in the entire NHL. $35,000 per point for Yanni Gourde. Getting great value so far, the Lightning are, in that contract. He's on a $1 million contract, but he signed a contract extension. He's going to become more expensive starting next season. Welcome back to NHL This Week. This segment of the show brought to you by our friends at Keener Jerseys. At Keener Jerseys, making a better jersey is what they do. To have your jersey customized or to order jerseys for your rec team, go to KeenerJerseys.com. Keener Jerseys, they are on your team. We'll talk about Yanni Gourde and other players who provide good value. Quick note about that interview with Ken Holland. He's so well spoken, and he's been around the game, and he's been through the trials and tribulations with that Red Wings organization for so long. I mean, the highs of multiple Stanley Cups, of being a juggernaut, of being a dynasty, versus the, what I'm going to say, lows are right now of struggling to make the playoffs and sort of working through the transition. But he's so well spoken. He's always nice for him to join us here on the program. We always appreciate his time. We hope you enjoyed some of that interview.
Yeah, and we talked about the Red Wings, the segment before Ken Holland came on as well. And we were talking about, you know, where they are in the standings. And, you know, they're only a couple of points behind a team like the Florida Panthers, who many people thought were kind of a lock to be a playoff team. So, yes, the Red Wings have only won two of their last 10 games, but they've been decimated by injuries, especially on the back end. So, you know, the fact that they have 39 points after 45 games, I think, is respectable. They're still going to be somewhere between 60 and 70 points. Sure, they're going to fall off, you know, towards the latter part of the season. The games are going to be meaningless for them, and they're going to start to play more of their young players. But
and especially as the trade deadline comes and goes, and presumably you trade a lot of those
Gustav Nyquist might get traded. Maybe, you know, you trade a Trevor Daley. But the point is, the future is bright. It's not like one of those teams that is a bad team that you're not sure really where they're going. You know where they're going. I mean, they've decided to go young.
They're going with Philip Zadina. They're going with Joe Valeno. They're going with some of the younger players that Ken Holland mentioned in that interview. And
Dylan Larkin is still a young player.
Yeah, he's still only, you know,
what is he, 22?
22, and he's you know, very sort of Shifley-esque in that he's taking sort of time to blossom, but he's now a point-per-game player, just around a point-per-game player.
He's going to be on the American team at the World Cup.
You think there's going to be a World
Cup?
You think there's going to be a World Cup?
I think so.
Okay, well, that was one of the topics that the insiders were talking about. They hope to find an answer about the World Cup of Hockey, the 2020 proposed World Cup of Hockey, by sort of the All-Star break. So you'll hopefully hear some news on that front in the next little while. That, along with the Olympics and the whole international hockey calendar, is up for debate between the NHL and the NHLPA. As you want to talk about some of the players, the most best bang for your buck for some of the players in the NHL, and we played that clip of Yanni Gourde. He's right up there. He's the fourth least expensive point per dollar player. Alex Chiasson leads the entire NHL right now. He's got 21 points. He's only making $650,000, $30,000 a point for Alex Chiasson. So the Oilers, who are out of the playoffs, have had tremendous value from Alex Chiasson. Other guys on your list.
Right, and you know, this segment we should mention is, you know, because of, I should say, inspired by Ken Campbell of the Hockey News wrote about Matthias Ekholm, and Matthias Ekholm is absolutely a bargain. He's making $3.75 million a year. Not only is he making $3.75 million this year, he's making it for the next 3 years. He's got 30 points in 43 games. He's having a career year. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to quickly go through some of these guys. Drew, on my original list, I had 10 players, but I'll kind of skim through them here. I mean, Sidney Crosby and Nathan MacKinnon have to be at the top of the list. When you're talking about Crosby, $8.7 million a year, he's well over a point per game. You could argue that Crosby's an $11.5 million a year player. MacKinnon is only making $6.3 million. Yeah. And he's under contract for 5 more years.
Yeah.
So it's really incredible when you talk about those two players. Mark Scheifele cannot be in a bargain discussion, when you're talking about $6.1 million for the next 6 years, including this year.
You're just talking about the value that he's providing, because that contract, I mean,
he's an absolute bargain.
If that contract was signed, you know, if Mark Scheifele was negotiating a contract today, or Nathan MacKinnon was negotiating a contract today, it starts with $10.5-$11 million per player.
Yep. I think when you're talking about Shifley, he's at least a $9 million a year player, and I agree, maybe more. And you know, I want to go through some other players. Andre Vasilevsky, making $3.5 million a year. He's already got 17 wins, .923 save percentage. I mean, he was a Vezina Trophy finalist last year, and Andre Vasilevsky is under contract for next year. You could argue that Vasilevsky should be making $7-$9 million a year. Few more guys here. Drew, Morgan Riley, $5.2 million a year. He's got 45 points in 42 games. He's arguably a Norris Trophy finalist this year, or at least a candidate midway through the season. Couple guys that I don't think are talked about enough here. Andre Kasha, $2.6 million a year. He scored 20 goals last year. He was injured earlier in the season, but he's got 19 points in 25 games. Elias Lindholm. Elias Lindholm was just signed to that contract in the offseason by Brad Tree Living, $4.85 million a year. He's got 50 points.
Yeah, we'll talk
in
more about
games.
We'll talk more about the Flames in the final hour of the show. About they are the first team, I mean, since the Pittsburgh Penguins in their heyday,
right,
to get four guys with 50 or more points at this point in the season.
Right, and you look at Lindholm and playing, yeah, on that line with Johnny Gaudreau and Sean Monahan.
That might be the best line in hockey.
Well, he's locked up for five more years after this year at 4.85. So for me, that's very manageable. Lauren Brossoit.
Mm-hmm.
$650,000. He's got 8 wins for the Jets, yeah, including a shutout. We know .939 save percentage. Lauren Brossoit has to be one of the best value contracts in the NHL right now. Another guy I wanted to throw in, John Klingberg. John Klingberg is making $4.25 million a year for the next 4 years. That's including this year, so 3 more years after this year. 20 points in 26 games. He had 67 points last year. I mean, again, another guy that probably should be making upwards of, you know, seven and a half a year.
It's all about timing. It's actually more fun to do with the more fun thing is to look. Cap Friendly has this great feature where it shows you the dollars per point, and you look at the least valuable ones. William Nylander is currently costing he's got 3 points in his 14 games with the Leafs. He's costing you $3.4 million per point that he's scored, which is the worst, quote unquote, in the NHL. I didn't realize that Ryan Kessler, who's obviously a shadow of himself, has played 40 games this year. Do you know how many points he has?
Not many.
6. I mean, that's...
One other guy to throw in, Drew, yeah, Roman Josi. He's making $4 million a year.
Wow.
And he has one more year left. Another guy, Victor Arvidsson. I mean, Nashville, for me, has the best value contracts in the entire league.
They certainly have done a great job in Nashville in getting those guys locked up to pretty good value. And like you said, the Jets with Mark Scheifele, he's certainly front and center on that list. And Lauren Brossoit, where would the Jets be with him without him as their backup goaltender so far this season? He's been incredible value. When we come back, we shift our focus to the Jets game tomorrow night in St. Paul against the Minnesota Wild. Tom Reed, Minnesota Wild radio analyst, joins us next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of NHL This Week starts now on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way to reach us here in studio. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
He's a member of the Minnesota Wild broadcast team. His name is Tom Reed. We're pleased to welcome him to the program to talk about the Wild ahead of the Jets' visit to St. Paul tomorrow evening. Tom, good evening, and thanks for joining us.
Well, my pleasure. Looking forward to the game tomorrow night.
Likewise, Tom, and the Wild are sort of in an interesting spot in the Western Conference. They hold down one of the wild card spots right now, but we know that the Wilds, you know, fancy themselves as one of the top three teams in the Central Division. So what's it going to take for the Minnesota Wild to sort of get back up into that echelon where they were last year, where they were really battling the Jets and the Predators for the top of the Central Division for much of the season?
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to be able to battle it back into that fold, to be honest with you. But at the same time, you know, they're back in a position right now. They had a tough loss last night in Boston. Did not play very well, but they just finished up a four-game road trip. They won 3 of the 4 games, and I think that was important for them to just get that confidence back. But we know it's going to be a dogfight right to the end. I mean, we're just getting in the second half of the season here right now, but certainly Winnipeg is one of the strengths of the Western Conference, and that certainly shows by the fact that they're number one in that Central Division.
Tom, we wanted to ask you about Joel Eriksson-Ek. He's a former first-round pick, as you know, back in 2015, and Eric Fair isn't going to be playing against the Jets tomorrow night, and I'm assuming that Joel Eriksson-Ek is going to play, but you know, this is now his third year with the Wild. He played the majority of the year with the Wild last year. Is this kind of his last chance to prove himself, or do you still think he's young enough that you know the best is yet to come for Eriksson-Ek?
Well, he's young enough. He's just 21 years of age, so he's got some growing to do here. But he has to step up. I mean, they're giving him every opportunity to really thrive as a member of this team. But he hasn't really grabbed onto that brass ring yet. Hopefully, that will be the case for him as he starts right now. He went down to Iowa. They sent him down there for a few games. He played five games down there, had four goals, a couple of assists, and they're trying to build his confidence up here. He's a big, strong kid also. He's got some great skills, but, you know, once you get on the ice, you have to perform, especially at this level. You have to be able to get some points here, and if you don't get points, you're pretty well gone.
Tom Reed is our guest on NHL This Week. Tom Reed's an analyst on Minnesota Wild. Broadcast the Jets in St. Paul tomorrow night to face the Wild. And Tom, Paul Fenton is the Wild general manager, as most of our audience would well know. And he took over the job about, I don't know, 6 or so months ago, replacing Chuck Fletcher after the playoffs. You know, how much longer until Paul Fenton begins to make his mark on this organization? It's a very similar roster to what the Wild had last season. And, you know, they don't really seem like they're legitimate Western Conference contenders. They're obviously not at the point where they're going to bottom out and begin a rebuild. So what does Paul, how much longer until Paul Fenton begins to make his mark, and what do you think he might be looking to do?
Well, when he came into the fold here in this last May, he said there's a few tweaks he wanted to make with his hockey club, and that comes from their owner also, Craig Leopold. But Paul comes into it as the first time general manager in his position. He's always been the assistant pretty well with Nashville, but he comes in here now. So he wanted to take a little bit of time to get a better read in this hockey club. He's added a little more toughness to this hockey club, which a little more grit, which we have not had in the past. But he just wants to evaluate this. And I think as we get closer to the trade deadline, I think his radar screens have to be up here. He's one of those guys that loves to scout. He likes to watch players. He's not so much about watching his own team here in Minnesota as he is about going out and looking at other teams where he thinks there might be a player that can attribute some expertise to the club here in Minnesota. But I think right now you're looking at him as a first year, and hopefully he can be able to make those deals that will certainly help this hockey club.
You know, Tom, you mentioned grit there in your answer, and you know that really bodes well for my question. I wanted to ask you about Jordan Greenway. He's a guy who, you know, is now in his first full NHL season. He played a little bit for the Wild last year. Also a 2015 draft pick in the second round. But what have you seen from Greenway this year? Because he always seems to be a pest when he plays the Jets.
You know, I will tell you, he's probably, to me, the most improved player that I've watched with the Wild this year. And I've watched every game, of course, because of the broadcast. But he's a big body. He skates well. He moves well. He's got quick hands for a guy. I mean, he's a big body, also at 6'6", about 230 pounds. And he's one of those guys, I think, that really is going to be able to step up with this club. He certainly has been an inspiration, I think, to this hockey team. And when you look at his size, I think as he develops into this league and gets to learn more about his structure, his body, you know, the size that he has, then I think he's going to be a much better player for this hockey club. But it's going to take some time. I think it's going to take a couple more months, I think, before he really gets into it. But he's been a fun guy to watch, at least from my standpoint.
Tom Reed is our guest on NHL This Week. We're talking about the Minnesota Wild. The Jets and the Wild tomorrow evening, a game you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290. Tom, you know, Matt Dumba goes out of the Wild lineup and he's going to be out for the foreseeable future. They say the next 3 months or so, which would maybe get him a return date right around the playoffs. How do the Wild sort of handle that injury? We remember what happened late last season when they lost Ryan Suter and he wasn't available in that first round playoff matchup against the Jets. How do the Wild sort of keep their head above water knowing Dumba's going to be out of their lineup for much of, if not the rest of the season?
You know, every team goes through difficult times when they lose star players. I don't care if it's Sidney Crosby or Pittsburgh or who it may be, but you lose those star players. You hope that you have the ability and you have that strength in your farm system to be able to step up and make some good things happen. It's a huge loss for Minnesota. I mean, he was our number one defenseman, especially in the power play. He had six goals, six assists, and that's where you miss him more than anything else. But you know what? Other guys have to step up. Injuries are always going to be a part of the game, and you hope that you've got the depth in your squad that you can combat those situations.
Tom, we mentioned Eric Fair earlier, and the reason why we're probably mentioning him is because he's a good Manitoba boy, but we wanted to ask you about what happened last night. Kenny Agostino received a game misconduct for the late hit on Eric Fair, and if you haven't seen it, it was a very dangerous hit. Marcus Foligno called it a blatantly dirty hit. I mean, what did you think of the hit, and are you surprised that the NHL Department of Player Safety didn't give him a suspension?
Yeah, I didn't like the hit. I thought it was a very late hit. It didn't have to come at that point. But, you know, the NHL, I mean, they're trying to curb the late hits. They're trying to curb the hits that really incur bodily injury to the players. It did not help our situation because Eric Fair, a Manitoba boy, you know, is one of those kids that have really stepped up. And he's been a great penalty killer for this squad this year. But unfortunately, we lose him right now, and I'm a little surprised the NHL didn't step down a little bit harder on that play. But they have the wherewithal to see all the different angles, which I didn't have the opportunity to see on the radio broadcast. But at the same time, I think the officials made the right call on the ice, and now we'll just have to see where it goes from here.
Tom Reed is the Minnesota Wild radio analyst. The Jets in the Wild tomorrow evening. Tom, Eric Staal, is he wearing a Minnesota Wild jersey next season?
I don't know. You know, it depends what his salary, expectation is going to be from his side. He's been terrific for Minnesota, no question. His first year, he had 28 goals. Last year, I think he had 42 goals. He's at 13 goals, which is still pretty good for halfway through the point at this point in the season. But we're only halfway through the season. But he's a guy, certainly, like a lot of our players on this team, they're more on the downswing, so he has to be careful. Were you going to be? Would he be trade consideration for some team trying to get in the playoffs? He certainly would be. He's a terrific guy. He's a terrific teammate. You know, he loves playing here, and I think he likes the cold weather. Not so much for him, but because his kids get to play outdoor hockey, which he always enjoyed growing up in Thunder Bay, Ontario.
Tom, I know that the name of the game now is it's all about speed and skill and goal scoring, but you know, when you talk about former Winnipeg Jet Matt Hendricks, you know, he's an older guy on the team and he doesn't play every night. I believe he's played 16 games for the Wild. He played last time the Wild were in town against the Jets, obviously a Minnesota Wild win, but how important is it to have a guy like him in the dressing room even if he's not playing every game?
Well, you know, it's important, and you guys have watched him play. You've been a part of his career as well, but he brings an awful lot of enjoyment, I think, to the players as well because of his expertise. I mean, he's been around for a long time, and I know he's very engaged in helping the young kids really step up their game. He's more concerned about the young kids stepping up in their game and getting better than he is about his own game, to be honest with you. I know he's very encouraging to the young guys coming in here, and it's nice to have a guy like that, you know, on the sidelines who is really cheering for you.
Tom Reed is our guest on NHL this week. Tom is a radio analyst on Minnesota Wild broadcast. Tom, Devan Dubnyk, we're just used to him being the rock in net for the Minnesota Wild. How would you evaluate his season to this point?
I thought he had a very good start. I thought that Dubby really gave Minnesota a chance to win a lot of games at the beginning. He went through a stretch like a lot of players. I don't care if you're a goaltender, defenseman, forward. You go through a stretch where things aren't quite as good, but he has really stepped up to the plate here. You look at his play the last three games. I mean, he's been absolutely terrific in the wins they've had against Toronto and then Ottawa and Montreal. I think in the last three games, he's given up to six goals against. He's a big body also, 6'6". And I think your team really revolves around your goaltender. If you have goaltending, you have a chance to win. If you don't have good goaltending, every game you go into, it's going to be a crapshoot whether or not you're going to be able to win hockey games. But I think Devan, for the most part, has been very good for this team.
Tom, final question for you, and we really appreciate you coming on tonight. Ryan Suter, 33 years old. He's obviously, on a long-term contract with the Wild. He's one of the main leaders for this team. Do you think sometimes he's underappreciated what he's doing? I mean, a couple of nights ago, he played 32 minutes against the Montreal Canadiens. Last night, he played 22 minutes against the Bruins, and that was the second game of a back-to-back. But does he almost go underappreciated how well he's playing at this point in his career?
Yeah, I think so. You know, he's in his 14th year now. He and Zach Parise both being in their 14th year in the career. They both came here in 2009 as as a mainstay for this hockey club. I think Chuck Fletcher did a good job, of, along with the owner, Craig Leopold, in bringing them here. They're halfway through their 13-year contracts right now. But Ryan Suter is one of those guys. He's a gamer. Every game, game in and game out, he loves to play. The more ice time he gets, the better he likes it. But he certainly is one of the strengths of the of Minnesota Wild on that blue line.
Tom Reed is a color analyst on Minnesota Wild radio broadcast. He's also a pub owner, so you might find us there at some point in time next time we're down in St. Paul. Is there a special code word we have to use or anything, Tom?
Just say Jet Burger. You'll get a Jet Burger, and it's pretty good.
There you go. That's what we like to hear. Tom, thanks for joining us this evening. Have a great call tomorrow night.
All right, thank you.
Take care. Tom Reed, Minnesota Wild radio analyst, joining us on the program. The Jets in St. Paul to meet the Wild tomorrow night, a game you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290. When we come back, Connor McDavid got beat up a little bit on the Oilers' West Coast trip. Does the NHL need to do more to protect McDavid and its other superstars? We talk about that next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
What a weekend for Connor McDavid in Saturday's loss against the Kings. He took an elbow to the face of Drew Doughty, not penalized. Then last night he scored the Oilers' first goal in their 4-0 win over the Ducks. But in the second period, he was nailed from behind by Hampus Lidholm. Once again, no penalty on the play.
And Oilers fans were apoplectic. Welcome back to NHL This Week. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. The segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Legal Curve Hockey. Mauro Zappia being, of course, an Oilers fan. And I didn't actually hear from Mauro if he was apoplectic or not, but I suspect he probably was. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
I mean, I want to get right into this here.
Get into it.
And
I've talked enough.
You know, Kyle Raymond was the referee who was standing right there when Hampus Lindholm hit Connor McDavid into the corner boards there.
Yeah.
And, you know, he doesn't call a penalty.
Raymond's at the blue line. So he's got the perfect view of it right down the boards.
Right.
Nothing's obstructing his view. He's looking right at it.
There are no players, Drew, between him and Connor McDavid and Hampus Lindholm. And I've watched this replay now at least 10 times, maybe 15 times. That's hitting from behind. And when you're a minor hockey coach, you're coaching youth hockey.
Mm-hmm.
And you talk about, you know, don't hit a guy when you see his numbers or you see his name bar.
Yeah.
I mean, at least that's what we were taught when I was younger and when I was coaching hockey. Sure.
Doesn't apply in the NHL.
Well, at the very least, it should have been a 2-minute penalty. And I think if you really want to protect, forget Drew the star players.
Sure.
Okay. If you want to protect hockey players, if you want to protect their necks, and I'm not talking about Wu-Tang Clan.
I don't understand that reference, but keep going.
There's a song called Protect Your Neck.
I got it.
When you're talking about protecting players
at
any level, I mean, that's a penalty. And I actually really like Hampus Lindholm. And the thing is, Drew, this is coming from a guy, you know me, I like the old school hockey. I like the fighting, even though fighting isn't a big part of the game anymore. I love the physicality in hockey, right? I mean, mm-hmm. Scott Stevens is my favorite hockey player.
It's true.
If that tells you anything. But this is not a clean hit. And what would have happened if Connor McDavid broke his neck there?
I
think Hampus Lindholm would have been suspended 15 games.
So you're saying that it was the lack of injury that prevented there from being any... I mean, it's one thing for an official to blow the call. And obviously, in this instance, the official blows the call. And it's not excusing it, but, you know, in the course of a game, it's bang bang, who knows why he missed the call, but he clearly missed the call, and as a result he's going to, I'm sure it'll be on his official's evaluation, which of course is never made public, but you know, in the heat of the moment, things happen where you can miss a call. What about the fact that there's no supplemental discipline? I mean, is it worthy of supplemental discipline?
Yes.
And there was never really any discussion that there should be any supplemental discipline.
And Hampus Lindholm is not a dirty player. I don't think he's ever been fined, let alone suspended. I might be wrong about that, but I'm pretty sure he has a completely clean record. But that shouldn't factor in here. I mean, the fact is, now with social media,
mm-hmm.
you can see this hit now on Twitter, on Facebook. You can see it on YouTube. I mean, all the websites, NHL.com. I mean, now you just see this over and over again. And yes, are we talking about this more because it's Connor McDavid? But if it was Nathan MacKinnon or Taylor Hall or Sidney Crosby or, God forbid, somebody on the Jets like Scheifele or Wheeler or Laine, we would be talking about this. And the scary thing to me is next time this happens and someone gets injured, what is the reaction going to be then?
It's a very reasonable point. Here's what the guys on That's Hockey had to say about the hit. Who is this? Pierre LeBrun and Jamie McLennan. Thank you to producer James for helping me out on that one.
No one really came to his defense. To make matters worse, the referee was just standing a few feet away, was looking right at it, and decided no call. You guys saw the way it all unfolded. You saw what happened to McDavid. You saw guys who maybe didn't come to McDavid's defense. What do you think of the way it all played out?
I was fine with it because Connor McDavid engaged Hampus Lindholm as well. So if you want to take the tail of the tape, McDavid gave Lindholm a forearm shiver. Before that, Lindholm had the reaction. I hate hitting from behind. I hate that. It was a push, and it was a dangerous situation. You never want to see a star get injured whatsoever. Same thing with Pettersson. I know there was a lot of uproar in Vancouver about Kotkaniemi getting tied up with him. You want the stars to play in the National Hockey League. The refs just have to call the penalties. And there were two penalties on that McDavid play, McDavid and Lindholm, but neither one of them were called. I think if the refs started to enforce every rule,
then you won't have to worry about
the guys will curb their appetite.
Yeah.
That's the way I feel.
It's a popular narrative over the last week, obviously, with the injury to Elias Pettersson as well.
Yeah.
You know, protecting the stars in the National Hockey League. And obviously, you don't want to see Connor McDavid get abused. I get that. I'm all for protecting him. But I will also tell you that making the theoretical narrative become a practical matter is easier said than done. What's important, as News just said, is the guys in stripes, obviously, you have to call what is a penalty. But you can't send out a league memo and saying, let's make sure the stars in particular are protected above all else.
But it's taking liberties with the stars, though, isn't it?
But if taking liberties with any player is wrong.
Okay. Yeah.
So if Connor McDavid draws 7 penalties in a game because of his speed and his talent, then there should be 7 power plays for the Edmonton Oilers. Okay?
Yeah.
The refs shouldn't curb it back because it's embarrassing to keep having the same guy draw penalties. If it's a penalty, call it. But it's not because he's a special player. It's because the play is warranted. If there's a hooking call, a cross check, call it. But not because he's a star, because he has legitimately, as per the rule book, drawn the call.
And the thing, Gino, too, is McDavid can curb the appetite. I talked about it earlier. If he can get a little meaner, too. If you know that you're going to
turn around,
a
little
stick,
flailing
you,
stick, listen, little Crosby.
I played with Chris Pronger, and I know that game's changed. But Chris, if you were going to hit him, he was going to hit you. And Connor doesn't have to play that way. But that team, if you take a look on paper, Edmonton's one of the toughest teams in the National Hockey League. They've got many guys that would be willing combatants.
I don't care who it is, whether it's McDavid or anybody else. That hit from behind from Lindholm had to be called.
Yeah.
And to have the referee standing there watching it and not calling it, that sends a bad message. That's my thought.
I think Gino nails it there, Drew. And you know, I love noodles. I mean, Jamie McLennan is a great analyst, but I disagree with him. I really agree with what Pierre LeBrun said and what Gino Retta said there at the end. And, you know, if you slow the replay down and you actually pause it right before Connor McDavid is hit, he's clearly facing the boards and he's in a vulnerable position. So for me, it has nothing to do with, you know, repercussions or anything like that. I mean, It's a play that you have to call because plays like that result in injuries. Now, Connor McDavid wasn't injured on the play, but he easily could have been.
What do you think about the comment about maybe McDavid himself needs to be, I mean, a little dirtier? I mean, that's more or less what Jamie McLennan is saying there when he played with Chris Pronger, because, I mean, Pronger was not known as a clean player. If you were going to hit Pronger, you were going to get...
Clean player? Chris Pronger was one of the roughest players in the entire league.
So, I mean, obviously you're not going to turn McDavid into a goon, but, you know, no. Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin especially, is, you know, a sneaky player who plays a little bit on the edge. You remember his battles with Blake Wheeler last season,
right,
where, you know, they gave it as good as they got it. You know, what about, you know, McDavid maybe getting a little bit of a hardened edge and saying, if you're going to take a liberty with me, you're going to get a two-hander in the back of the legs and you're going to know that you don't touch me.
Well, and the other thing that I don't agree with, you know, that McLennan said is, you know, he said that, you know, McDavid, you know, did something, he shoved him, or, you know, he got in the face of Hampus Lindholm. To me, that's a moot point. I mean, what we're talking about here is Lindholm very dangerously.
Yeah.
And again, if you haven't seen it, go watch it on YouTube or, you know, go watch it on NHL.com.
Anybody from the city of Edmonton, ask them about it. They'll give you a Zapruder film breakdown of the video.
You know, it's very easy to find. And, you know, I think it was, if I'm not mistaken, it was Jim Matheson who talked to Carey Fraser. And I actually wanted to bring up that quote here from Carey Fraser, of course, former NHL referee. We've had him on the show before. He says, "This was a hard shove in a cross-checking motion that launches him with speed into the boards. That's a no-brainer to me, and if a referee doesn't react, and my first question to him would be, do you not think that was a penalty? And if you don't think that's a penalty, then we have a problem. He had to have seen it, so why didn't he react to it?" I mean, that's Carey Fraser, a longtime former NHL referee. He knows what he's talking about.
Sure, and he's going against the fraternity and sort of calling out the official. I mean, I have to believe it's just a brain cramp, and that's the problem when you use humans, is that it's a brain cramp. To me, you know, and I mentioned it before, it's almost even more malicious is the fact that the Department of Player Safety doesn't think there's anything wrong with
that's
it.
That's probably more troubling. And again, you know, we're not here to, you know, pick on Kyle Raymond at all here. But, you know, when you watch the replay, and I have to admit, I was not watching the game live, so I don't know what led up to the hit. But regardless of what led up to the hit, Drew, I mean, it's just a dirty hit that you shouldn't be doing. The NHL defensemen, NHL forwards, anybody, I mean, you can't hit a guy like that when he's in a vulnerable position, because those types of hits result in serious injuries.
Quickly, the night before, when the Oilers played in Los Angeles, Connor McDavid got an elbow to the face from Drew Doughty. Nobody on the Oilers reacted to that at all. Your thoughts on that, about nobody jumping to McDavid's defense when he takes a pretty blatant elbow to the face from Doughty, and Doughty is seen sort of laughing about it afterwards, you know, saying, you know, look, I can elbow your superstar, and nobody reacted.
Right, and I wasn't watching that game. So, right. I mean, again, I don't, it's tough for me to comment. Drew, it's not a cop-out answer, but, you know, I just didn't see the game. And, you know, it's surprising to me that a guy like Milan Lucic or Zach Kassian wouldn't at least, you know, go up to Drew Doughty and say something. I don't think they're going to fight.
If you're
Drew
on the
Doughty.
Edmonton Oilers, if you're a player on the Edmonton Oilers and your name is anything other than Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, or Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, if anybody touches one of those three players, you should be chasing after a guy with a chainsaw. They're the only reason your team isn't the absolute worst team in the entire NHL. So if you're Milan Lucic, if you're Zach Kassian, if you're any number of the players on the Edmonton Oilers, and you see anybody taking liberty with your two superstars and your one very good player, you need to jump in there no matter what the cost is to yourself.
You know, the other thing I want to mention, you know, everybody brings this up every time a star player, you know, is touched.
Yeah.
You know, one of the quote-unquote, you know, enforcers on the team has to go after him. This isn't the 1980s anymore. I mean, Milan Lucic is not Dave Semenko. Milan Lucic is a tough hockey player, one of the toughest players in the league. I mean, he's a man mountain. But he's not going to go over there and you know, hit him with a stick. This isn't Marty McSorley and Donald Brashear. I mean, those days are long gone.
Right, but there's still, you can, if you see Drew Doughty elbow Connor McDavid, when you have an opportunity in the game, you give him a good cross check to the ribs. That part of the game hasn't disappeared. I'm not saying you come after him like a complete raving lunatic, but you make sure that if somebody is taking some liberties with your player, You react in kind. You don't do anything dirty. You don't do anything to try and injure the player. But you let him know that, hey, yeah, you got a shot in on McDavid. You're going to get a shot as a result back from me. I don't think that's too much to ask still. And I'm a bleeding heart liberal, Ezzy. You're the one who should be advocating for what
no,
I'm saying.
No, and I love old school hockey. And I love fighting. But, you know, I didn't see the game, so I don't know
the context.
I don't know what the context is. I don't know if Lucic or Kassian or, you know, anybody else on the Oilers went up to Drew Doughty. But I mean, you're gonna fight Drew Doughty? He's one of the best defensemen in the league.
I didn't say you're gonna fight him. You're gonna put a cross check into his ribs. That you can do. When we come back, more on the Detroit Red Wings. Max Boltman covers the Red Wings for TheAthletic.com. He joins us next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, welcome back to NHL This Week. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From theathletic.com, he covers the Detroit Red Wings. We're pleased to welcome to the program Max Boltman. Max, good evening, and thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks so much for having me.
Our pleasure, Max. Appreciate you making yourself available for us on this Wednesday evening. You know, Max, obviously the Red Wings going to make their only visit to Winnipeg on Friday night. And earlier on our program, we were joined by Red Wings general manager Ken Holland. And, you know, we were talking to Ken about the Red Wings season, and he was sort of lamenting the injuries that the Red Wings have suffered, where, you know, Anthony Mantha's been out of the lineup. They're now without Trevor Daley, Danny DeKeyser, and Mike Green. How different is this Red Wings, I guess, place in the standings? If they had a little better luck in terms of injuries and in terms of their health this season?
Well, I think it's tough to say for two reasons. Number one, because you're dealing with a fairly small sample of time where you've actually had everybody healthy, right? Like, you know, I think it may be 15 to 20 games that you could really say you had even 90% of the whole lineup in. Now, those games went pretty well, but I think, you know, there's a lot of things that can change there with the schedule and all that stuff. Second reason being, you know, they've been in just about every game for this entire season, but the thing that they're lacking still isn't necessarily the thing that was out when they were injured. They're lacking a game-breaking forward and a really shut-down top defenseman. Now, Mike Green, up to his credit, has been outstanding when he's been in the lineup. I think he's probably the biggest difference. Anthony Mantha definitely adds an element. Darren Helm does some things on the forecheck that I think are really hard to replace. I think they'd be higher in the standings without question. Are they a playoff team with everybody healthy? I still don't think so. But certainly, you know, as those pieces are getting healthy, as Darren Helm's come back in, as Anthony Mantha's come back in, and it's possible you could see Mike Green relatively soon, you'll certainly see an improved Red Wing team. But perhaps not the difference between maybe a playoff team and kind of the spot they're in now.
Max, as you know, Gustav Nyquist is a pending UFA. He's actually having a nice season, 37 points in 45 games, including 10 goals. If the Red Wings do decide to move him prior to the NHL trade deadline, what kind of return do you expect?
I mean, that's the big question, right? I mean, there are some really talented wingers that could be on the market, and I think anytime you deal with what somebody's going to draw in a trade, that's the first place you have to look. Is to what the value is relative to the rest of the market. I mean, if Artemi Panarin is available, if Mark Stone is available, if Wayne Simmons is available. Now, Simmons is a very different kind of player, but certainly teams that are looking to add help at winger, they're going to look to some of those other names too. And certainly as those guys, if they are available, if they get moved, as they get moved, there become fewer teams that have a need and then fewer teams that are willing to pay a really high price. I'm sure the Red Wings would love to get a first-round pick. They got a great deal last year for Tomas Tatar. They were able to get him a first, second, and a third for him, but he had a lot of term on his contract, and they were able to get a team in Vegas that really wanted to go for it. And so I think that's, you know, always the tough question is what's somebody gonna draw on the trade market? Unfortunately, there's not really a good answer because it always is going to depend on how badly a team needs it and exactly what else is out there and available.
Max Boltman, our guest on NHL This Week. We're talking about the Detroit Red Wings. They're in town Friday night to meet the Jets, their sole visit to Winnipeg this season. You know, a laundry list of pending UFAs for the Red Wings, and one of the most prominent ones among those most prominent goalies that could potentially be on the market is, of course, Jimmy Howard. He's going to the All-Star game as the Red Wings representative. Just how good has Jimmy Howard been for the Red Wings this season, and is it a situation where his numbers don't accurately reflect the value that he's provided to the team?
Well, he's been really good, and I think especially during some of these stretches where they have had guys out, he's really been able to keep them in games. I mean, it's a team that really hasn't, I don't think, played very many complete 60-minute performances, but one of the reasons that they have been in all these games and in some cases been able to make some pretty impressive comebacks is because their goalies kept him in a lot of them. I mean, Jimmy Howard's been great. I think Jonathan Bernier has been better than his numbers would say. So goaltending certainly has been an area that the Red Wings can feel good about so far. Now, the question is always going to be, can it keep up? Like, Jimmy Howard is certainly the past few years had a career resurgence. I don't think there's any doubt about that. You feel good for a guy like that who's been able to do that as he gets into his later years. Certainly this year, he's going to the All-Star game. But certainly a question going forward with the Red Wings is how much can they expect him to keep this up? And I think it's going to go a long way in determining exactly where they fall in the standings at the end of the year.
Max, we were at the draft in Buffalo in 2016, and I vividly remember when Dennis Cholowski was drafted by the Red Wings 20th overall. He was a bit of an unknown coming out of the BC Junior Hockey League, and this year, he's having a nice rookie season. He's not mentioned as, a Calder Trophy candidate, but he's averaging over 18 minutes a game. What's impressed you most about Cholowski?
It'd have to be the offense. And I mean, it's funny that you reference back to the draft night, because I think you can go out there. We actually did a story with Dennis this summer as he was getting ready for training camp. And you can go back and you can put side by side. We took the same photo from I think it was his draft night, or maybe it was the combine. I don't remember exactly which, where he's got the stick flexed out like they do. We put comparisons up 1 year, 2 years ago to this summer, and the physical transformation has been astounding. He's just filled out so much. He's a lot stronger, a lot more physically mature. That's been a huge part of it, but I think ultimately, this guy's a really good skater. He's poised. He's been able to contribute a lot offensively right away. He's on the power play. I think in the areas that he's still working to shore up would be defense, shutting down plays, gapping up. Those are the things that you look at for a young defenseman to really struggle with, and he has not been immune to that. But if you ask the Red Wings, they've been very happy with his offensive game, and certainly he's stayed in the case to be a pretty central part of the future of the franchise.
Max Boltman is our guest on NHL this week. Max covers the Detroit Red Wings for TheAthletic.com. The Red Wings into Winnipeg on Friday night. Max, Jeff Blashill is actually another one of those unrestricted free agents at season's end. His contract as Red Wings head coach expires when the season ends. What do you think happens with this situation? He's been with the organization both in Detroit and then in Grand Rapids before that, I think for almost the last decade. What do you think the future holds for Jeff Blashill with Detroit?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that, and maybe the only person who does is the guy you had on about an hour ago there. But I'm just as curious to see as you are, because I don't think there's any illusion that the record under Jeff Blashill has not been what I don't think anybody in the organization would have desired, and that includes Jeff. Now, what I'd also say is I think when you look at the what he's had to work with, where the roster's been, what's happened in these 4 years, this was always going to be a downslope for the organization, no question. And so when you look at the way that they're playing these games, they're in all of them, they're competing hard, and you've seen some progress from the young players. Certainly I don't think Jeff Blashill has done a bad job by any means. Now the question is going forward as the corner starts to turn, because you're in a couple of years as some of these prospects start arriving, this should be a team on the rise. That's the question the Red Wings have to ask themselves, is who's the right guy to guide it. I think Jeff Blashill's made a really good case that he deserves to stay on as the coach, but ultimately the guy who's going to make that decision presumably would be Ken Holland, and I'm very curious to see too.
Max, Evgeny Svechnikov has missed the entire year so far. He suffered that knee injury back in the preseason, and he was interviewed early last week, and he said that he still hopes to come back this year. Do you think there's a chance that he comes back in March or April, or are they just worrying about next year at this point?
Yeah, I don't think they're going to be in any rush to get Evgeny back on the ice. Now, Evgeny was out skating not too long ago, and he came into the locker room. We asked him. Sounded like he might have a little bit of desire to try and make it back for those last week or so in March. But that's a long way out. There's a lot to happen between now and then. And that's even if assuming that he'd be able to convince Detroit to let him, play in a game like that. That kind of injury is not something that you really want to mess around with. I'm sure Evgeny would love to get back on the ice, but I would be a little surprised if he was able to get onto the ice this season, just because there's really no reason to rush it. They're not chasing and trying to get him into the lineup for a playoff hunt. They've got to look at him and see whatever's going to be best for his development, whatever's going to help him have as good a shot as possible as becoming an impact player for him. So I would be a little surprised if he made it back into the lineup this season, but I'm sure he's going to try.
Max Boltman is our guest on NHL This Week. Max joins us to talk about the Red Wings, the Detroit Red Wings. He writes about them for TheAthletic.com. Max, Justin Abdelkader will be 32 years old next month, actually on the trade deadline on February 25th. He's got four more years on his contract after this season. It's not looking to be like a great contract, but what can the Red Wings maybe hope to salvage from Justin Abdelkader as his career gets into the later years?
Yeah, certainly the statistical output that Abdelkader produces isn't going to be in line with the contract, the cap hit. What I think you can look to for Justin Abdelkader is a couple things. The Red Wings do need to be conscious as they go through this period, and I know that people don't always like to hear it, but of maintaining a culture. I mean, they need to have a situation where everybody comes into the locker room every single night expecting to win, doing everything they can to win, whether that's in preparation, whether it's on the ice. He's a guy that I think people can look to as a guy who's been there, who's won, who knows what that looks like, who knows what that feels like in the locker room to have that kind of culture. That's kind of in leadership, essentially. That's kind of what you're looking to Abdelkader for. He's not going to be able to be a first line, a second line player, even though he does sometimes play there, but not in the traditional sense, right? Like he's not necessarily going to be, he's not going to be one of your offensive superstars. He's going to kill penalties. He's going to do hard things. And really, they need him to be a leader. They need him to be a steward of a Red Wing culture as they transition over, as the guard changes into some of the kind of the Larkin era, essentially.
Max, we wanted to ask you about Filip Zadina. He just finished the World Junior Tournament, and, you know, some people thought he was a little bit underwhelming, but regardless, he's a top prospect in the Red Wings system, and he's playing for Grand Rapids right now. Is the expectation that Zadina is going to get a bit of a look towards the end of the year? And for Red Wings fans right now who are kind of, you know, suffering through a difficult year in terms of not being a playoff team, is that what is kind of keeping Red Wings fans going right now, knowing that players like Dennis Cholowski, Filip Zadina, Filip Hronek, Michael Rasmussen, I mean, these are the bright future young stars?
Yeah, I think that's very much where a lot of the hope lies for the franchise. I mean, Zadina, he's a first-year pro in the NHL. I believe he's at 17 points in 27 games coming into tonight. They're playing in Milwaukee. He just got back from the World Juniors. I don't think that went exactly how Zadina would have hoped, but I don't think it really changes the long-term expectations for him that he's going to be a first-line scoring forward. You know, you mentioned a few other names in there. Joe Valeno, you know, this year's second first-round pick, is having a great year in Quebec, and certainly those are junior numbers that he's putting up, and you got to wait to see what it's like when he's a pro. But those are things that Red Wings fans do look toward, I think. They look down the pipeline, and they say, okay, these are the guys that are going to come up and be a part of the next contending Red Wing team. Now, they actually have to get there, and they actually have to live up to that billing, that hype, if they are going to usher in a new era for the Red Wings. But I certainly don't think it's unreasonable to think that those are some of the guys who are going to make up the core of the next good Red Wings team.
Last question for you, Max. Andreas Athanasiou has got 17 goals so far this season. He's clearly going to shatter his career high of 18 goals. Are we seeing a player taking that next step in becoming an elite goal scorer, maybe not in the entire NHL, but at least on this Red Wings team? It's not like his shooting percentage is completely out of whack. It's just under 15%, which is high, of course, but it's not, you know, exceedingly high.
No, and when you consider the number of breakaways he gets, I don't think it's really that out of line at all. Like, this is a guy who creates his own scoring chance. He finds a little bit of space, just a step, in open ice in the neutral zone, and he's gone. I mean, he scored a goal against Nashville the other night. I don't know if you can count on two hands the number of players in the league who not only chase down the puck that he chased down, but are able to roof it from that angle and score it. You know, just last night, I think he scored a goal without even barely looking at the net. I mean, he was looking off his other winger going in on a two-on-one. He's looking left as if he's going to, like, he's showing pass, essentially. And then he just hits it in the top corner. These are impressive plays, and you certainly are seeing the next step for him. I mean, I think he's going to surpass 20 goals by the end of the month, potentially, and end the year. I think he's got a real shot to get 30. You know, I don't think you can expect that from him, but I think 25 should kind of be the expectation, and you see where you can go from there. That represents a big step up. You know, his next goal will tie his career high, and it is, what, January 9th, I think. Like, it's just impressive stuff. The real big step he's taken is in being a more consistent, a little bit more complete player, which has gotten him on the ice a little bit more. Now, certainly, the exit of Henrik Zetterberg has allowed some more ice time for him, but he's also made strides. And I think Jeff Blashill talked extensively this year about how much more engaged he feels like Andreas has been. It shows up in how he's playing, and he's really become probably right next to Dylan Larkin the key offensive piece for them.
Max Boltman covers the Detroit Red Wings for TheAthletic.com. Max, appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this evening.
Thanks so much for having me.
Take care, Max. Max's appearance on the program was brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Bernstein's is a proudly family-owned and operated and has been serving quality home-style food since 1985. For freshly made and fresh frozen foods delivered right to your door, visit shopbernsteins.com and check them out live and in person at the Cordon Village Mall. When we come back, we discuss the Calgary Flames and the fact they have four scores with 50 or more points this early in the season. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Flames power play. Elias Lindholm to Matthew Tkachuk to Monahan for the goal. That gives the Flames four players with 50 points already. Just spreading it out there. They had just two reach that mark last season.
Certainly one of the best offenses in the NHL. The Calgary Flames absolutely ripping it up on the score sheet. Johnny Gaudreau, 64 points. Sean Monahan, 54 points. Elias Lindholm and Matthew Tkachuk, 50 points each. The Calgary Flames are the first team since the 1995-96 Pittsburgh Penguins to have four different players get 50 or more points within the first 45 games of a season. The Penguins did it back then with Mario Lemieux, Ron Francis, and Thomas Sandstrom. So the Flames in some pretty good company so far this year. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This final segment brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com all week long at Rumors. And featuring a special Sunday night performance, which is a little more risque and a little more dirty.
I like the Sunday performance.
Well,
that's a good day to go see stand-up comedy. Like Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday night, that's kind of the nights that you think of.
Yeah.
But why not go see comedy on a Sunday?
Well, Rumors isn't typically open on Sundays, but this Sunday they're going to be open because Kelly Taylor,
nice,
from Saskatchewan,
yep,
is doing a special quote-unquote dirty show,
nice,
on Sunday night. So it's not maybe for the faint of heart, but if you like to laugh at things that might be a little bit blue, if you like some off-color humor, Sunday night at Rumors, Kelly Taylor will be your man. But during the week, from now all the way through the two shows on Friday night and Saturday night, hits his normal routine, and he is fantastic. So check it out, RumorsComedyClub.com. So what about this Calgary Flames top four there, Ezzy, that each has 50 points or more so far this season? Would you take the Flames top line players over any other team's top line players right now? I'm not talking about their forwards 1 through 12, because obviously that's not an issue. The Tampa Bay Lightning have scored the most goals in the entire NHL. But would you take the Flames, Gaudreau, Monahan, Tkachuk, and Lindholm? Or would you take the Lightning, Kucherov, Stamkos, Point, Tyler Johnson?
Right. I'd probably go with the Lightning's top four. I love Braden Point. We talk about him all the time on this show.
Yeah.
Former Moose Jaw Warrior. I mean, he's becoming one of the best two-way forwards in the game.
Yeah.
He might hit 40 goals this year. Right. I mean, when you're talking about Stamkos.
He might hit 50 goals this
right,
year.
Stamkos, Kucherov. I mean, it's tough to not pick the Lightning top four. But Johnny Gaudreau, I mean, if he's not in your Hart Trophy conversation, I mean, he's in the Hart Trophy conversation. But if you don't have him in your top five, I mean, you haven't been watching the Flames. Flames have already beat the Jets twice this year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this Flames team is really good.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to either win the Pacific or they're going to finish second in the Pacific. I mean, they're going to be battling with San Jose and Vegas. But Elias Lindholm, to me, Drew, has really kind of been that last piece of the puzzle for Bradtree Living. I mean, I realize Dougie Hamilton was probably the better of the defensemen in terms of being a better offensive defenseman. Dougie Hamilton's numbers actually haven't been great in Carolina. And actually,
he's on the trade block by all accounts.
Right, it's ridiculous. He's already been on three NHL teams, and he's only 25 years old. But, I mean, I actually really like Noah Hanifin's game. He's a very good puck-moving defenseman. But, back to your question, I mean, what about Mark Giordano? You mentioned four guys with 50 or more points. He's got 40.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, Mark Giordano is going to easily hit 50. He might hit 70 this year. He's in the Norris Trophy conversation at 35 years old. So, I mean, this Flames team is a very good team. This is not a fluke season for this team. I mean, this is an upper echelon Western Conference team. I'm not saying they're going to win the Stanley Cup. I'm not saying that the Flames are better than the Jets, because I actually think the Jets are a better team. The Flames have got the better of the Jets so far this year, but
it's the goaltending in Calgary that leaves me with the most pause about the team. The goaltender,
right? And David Rittich, Drew, is the number one goaltender now. I mean, that's evident. I mean, Mike Smith is number two there now, and David Rittich was a bit of an unknown last year.
Rittich is 15-4-3, and he's got a .921 save percentage and 2.40 goals against.
And that's why when we were talking about kind of our midseason or holiday break award winners, I said David Rittich has to be a dark horse for the Vezina. And, Marc-Andre Fleury and John Gibson and Vasilevsky are ahead of him, because Riddick's only played, the 21 games. But, I mean, he's a really good goaltender. But, when you're talking about, this Flames team with Goudreau and Monahan and Matthew Tkachuk, and, even throw in a guy like Mark Jankowski, who, is playing on the third line there.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got a lot of offensive weapons. And, Elias Lindholm, like I said, I mean, he's just really complimented to those two players. And it's one of the most dangerous lines in the league, for sure.
Whoever finishes in that one spot in the Pacific Division gets such a huge advantage playing either one of the wild card teams and avoiding, the Golden Knights and the Sharks and the Flames are battling it out, and not having to play one of those tough teams in the first round is a huge advantage. And the Pacific Division is going to be way more interesting than it was last season in the playoffs. That's it for this Wednesday edition of NHL This Week. In case you missed any of the program, it's available on our website, illegalcurve.com. It's on tsn1290.ca. It's wherever you get your podcasts. Get it sent to your device each and every week. We were joined by Red Wings general manager Ken Holland, Tom Reed of the Minnesota Wild radio broadcast, and Max Boltman, who covers the Red Wings for theathletic.com. Big thanks to those three gentlemen. Big thank you to producer James DeRoschuk, doing a great job behind the board. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. For Ezra Ginsberg, I'm Drew Mindell. Thanks for listening. Until Saturday morning, we wish you good night and good luck.